If you do any prospecting with LinkedIn, you have got to go get set up with Surf. That's S-U-R-F-E. It's a tool you can use to add new contacts to your CRM system directly from LinkedIn in seconds. I'm using it every single day. I add contacts, follow my deals, keep track of notes, and it ends up saving me a bunch of time on prospecting and outreach, which means I can spend more time moving my deals along. The data is always 100% accurate since I don't have to copy and paste all the fields over from each and every contact that I want to put in my CRM. Instead, Surf does that all automatically with just one click in about 60 seconds. The team over at Surf has put together a very special offer for fans of Sales Players. There's a link down in the show notes and you can use the promo code JWSURF5. Don't forget the E at the end of Surf. That's JWSURF5 for 5% off your first year. Don't spend another minute doing things manually. Go get set up with Surf.
This episode is sponsored by Apollo, a tool that's helping me to open doors and close deals faster. Wanted to share it with you. Apollo is a complete end-to-end sales platform, letting you email, dial, connect on social, build plays, and schedule meetings. With conversational intelligence transcribing my calls lately and reminding me to act on my next steps to drive deals across the finish line, it's been a lifesaver. It's no wonder Apollo is the most loved sales tool on the planet. Thousands of users rank Apollo as a top tool on G2. Start today completely free and see how Jesse and I use Apollo. Sign up in the show notes below or at thesalesplayers.com/Apollo. That's thesalesplayers.com/APOLLO to start your free trial.
Today we're speaking with Corey Quinn. Corey is the former CMO of Scorpion, a company that he helped grow from 20 million to 150 million in 6 years. He is also the host of the Vertical Go-to-Market podcast and the author of Anyone, Not Everyone. This is a great conversation where he shared some of the lessons he learned from building the outbound motion for Scorpion and growing into 150 million in revenue. And we talk about a bunch of different tactics. He shares some of the campaigns he ran and plays that he ran that helped them grow the company and some of his learnings along the way. We talk about his book and the process that went into creating that book and a bunch of other topics. So with that said, here's Corey.
All right, Sales Players, Chase Barmore here, and I have Jesse and our guest today, Corey Quinn, which, funny enough, Corey and I, again, have never met in real person in IRL, but we met through a Slack group, which was the Agency Cocktails. I was introduced to this really off-the-wall group of where I think you could sign up and get a bottle of wine or get cookies sent to your house. And then it was a Zoom meeting of all these different agency owners. And it was a networking group, and the Slack channel. I was invited to it after this group, and Corey was in it, and he was posting his podcast of just different people that he has worked with, different agency owners that have scaled, in different niches. And he's also the former CMO of Scorpion, which was a past competitor and has grown, helped that brand to grow to over 150 million in revenue. So, really excited to have you today, Corey. And I love the consistency of seeing you on LinkedIn. And I think you just came out with a book. So would love to learn more about your book that you're either coming out with or, it hasn't launched yet. I can't remember, but I love seeing your face and thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. And what maybe a good, I'm sorry, not Jesse, to cut you off, Corey. Maybe a good starting point would be just to tell us a bit about how you got started, but yeah, of course, introduce yourself. Give us kind of the overview.
Absolutely. So thank you both gentlemen for having me on. This is a real treat for me. I come from a sales background, despite the fact that my last role, my last in-house title was chief marketing officer. So my sales career started off after college, went to UC Santa Cruz, go banana slugs, where I came home, started a dot-com business back in 98, 99, where we raised about $6 million to launch a live on location streaming media business. This is long before iPhones ever existed. I had a business partner at the time. He was the technology dude and I was the business guy. And I would basically sell new deals for our startup. And that business went well for a couple of years. The dot-com sort of implosion happened, and then unfortunately we had to fold the business. I moved into a role at Morgan Stanley, the brokerage. Back in the day, it was called Morgan Stanley Dean Witter. And that's where I got exposed to their sales training program. Every new broker in that organization would go through a 2-month sales training. It was about the time when they really were leaning into this idea of consultative selling. Prior to that, it was much more of a transactional sale where you'd have a boiler room type of thing where it's like, hey, you're cold calling, trying to get people to buy a specific stock or make a specific transaction. When I was going through that sales program, the 2 months of sales training, they were talking a lot more about, the consultative approach, where it's understanding where the prospect is, what their current situation is, how they want to retire, and then building a specific plan to meet that goal, which I loved. I loved the sales process. I stayed in the financial world for, about 6 or 7 years. Was recruited to go work at UBS, at the world's the largest brokerage team that managed over $1 billion in assets here in Los Angeles. It was a great experience, but about that time, I was interested in getting out of finance and getting back into the internet. I went back to school, got my MBA at USC, came out of that experience and worked as a business development rep for for a digital marketing agency selling PPC and SEO. I was the leading salesperson on the team there for 17 consecutive quarters. I sold deals to Remax and Lululemon and Hyundai and so on and so forth. I spent about, 12 years, I should say about 9 years in the agency space before I took my last role, was as a marketer, interestingly, the chief marketing officer of a company called Scorpion. That was basically an agency. It's an agency that sells websites and local marketing to local service businesses. And so it was a very sales heavy approach. I came as the chief marketing officer there. It was the first marketing hire at the company to focus on growing the agency. We grew it from 20 million to 150 million. We started with 6 sellers. By the time I left the company, we had a sales team of 100 people. And we grew the client list from about 1,000 to about 15,000 during that time. So a lot of experience along the way, and I'm excited to be here.
And what are you doing today? So it seems like you exited Scorpion, and what do you do these days?
So today, my focus is, my passion is all around helping agency owners to transition from a generalist sort of go-to-market where they're serving people and businesses of all shapes and sizes to identifying a specific vertical market to become a specialist in and scale the business based on just focusing in on that one vertical and effectively saying no to everything else.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Tell us about, one of the things that really stands out about your background is the insane growth that you saw. It sounds like, both in headcount and in dollars, you were able to scale a team in a very significant way. And I know a lot of listeners want to hear, what are some of the habits, or what are some of the plays that you had to run in order to scale a company to that magnitude?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, when I arrived there in 2015, it was a 6-person sales team. They were all really well paid. They drove great cars and they didn't have to work that hard because the company had built up this beautiful sort of inbound flow of very warm leads. It was mostly attorneys at the time and who were calling in, and they would do these one call closes. Like the call would come in, a super warm lead, they'd close them on a deal, and then the salesperson would hang up the phone, be high fives all around. They'd hit the big sort of metallic gong on the sales floor, and it'd be just a great time. Wonderful business, right? And the company was doing about 20 million when I stepped in. The challenge was the founder-led agency was extremely ambitious gentleman. He still is. And he wants to help a lot more people than what he was able to sort of reach doing the things that they'd done to get to that point. And so, again, it was an inbound only sales motion. And so what we did is we, first off, we sort of formalized the sales process. We gave the sales team quotas and you know, those basic things. But also we introduced outbound, which was a foreign subject, sort of foreign topic to these sellers who didn't have to make the uncomfortable outbound cold calls and reaching out. They were used to just receiving these warm leads. And so that was a big process. It was a big undertaking where we went from, you know, inbound only to inbound and outbound. So I could talk about that process. And then the other thing that was really instrumental to our growth was we added on additional verticals to the primary focus, which again was attorneys. 85% of the business was attorneys. We evolved and we added in home services. But the thing that was interesting and that ended up working out for us really well was, instead of having the sellers who are selling to attorneys also have to sell to home service businesses, we actually hired a separate sales team and helped them to get up to speed with the specifics of the buyer and the home services buyer, the plumbers and the HVAC technicians. And as a result of that, we were able to scale it quite quickly. There's some stories there I could talk about. And basically at that point, we just rinse and repeat for a couple other verticals, which allowed us at the end of the day, as I mentioned, to grow revenue past 150 million, got to 200 million by the time I left.
Yeah, let's dig into some of those stories you mentioned, just along that journey of growth, setting up new verticals, shifting the mindset from inbound to outbound, and then kind of creating experts within the team who can focus on a specific industry.
Well, there's a lot there, but the one that I would say that helped us to scale the second vertical, which again was home services. These are local service businesses like plumbers, electricians, and roofers, and HVAC technicians. And the thing that we tried to do is we actually tried to do kind of what I was saying, which is have the carved out some of the sellers, the legal sellers, and have them sell into home services. And it wasn't until this guy, his name is Travis Carter, he's still there. And Travis was on the legal sales team, and he was sort of a great guy, big personality, really, hustler and worked really hard. He was never at the top of the sort of the leaderboard, if you will, for on the sales team, but he was always like, in the top third, let's say. And it wasn't until we moved him over to home services that he really began to shine. And the reason why was because he actually used to be a home service business owner. And so he'd get on a call with these plumbers and be able to talk as if he was one of the guys, right? He knew exactly what it was like, the struggles, the pains, the challenges of running a small home service businesses. And when it comes to marketing, if you're familiar, a lot of these home service business owners are very skeptical. And the fact that he had that background allowed him to disarm a lot of that, the friction and the objections that were sort of inherent in that sales process. And that really taught us the power of having a specialization in that vertical. We took that idea, it was kind of lightning in a bottle, and we invested in hiring and training more of our sales team who are dedicated to home services into not just, the SEO and PPC nature of that business, but also what it's like to really run that business. And, we read a book at the company, at the agency. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with it, but it's called Eat Their Lunch. I'm looking at my bookshelf. Eat Their Lunch by Anthony Iannarino. I think I'm going to screw up that last name.
I've heard of it. Yeah. I've heard it's really good. It's if you're in a competitive category. And
there you go.
I have not actually spent time personally in an agency, a digital agency, but I know that is a hugely competitive category because there's, I don't know how many tens of thousands or millions of agencies there are in the world.
Literally, must feel that way.
Yeah. So I can imagine it's a really helpful book for anyone selling in agencies is how to differentiate from the competition.
Yeah. The crux of it is that the way to differentiate is to become a strategic advisor. Not to be a transactional salesperson, but to understand that buyer's business, in some cases, from a different perspective than they would from a marketing perspective. And that's how you differentiate. You're not trying to sell them something. You're an advisor who's helping them to grow, right?
Colin, Let me ask you a question here about you worked in an agency where you were selling PPC directly. Were you going after outbound for those larger companies, or were those inbound deals for yourself? Talk to me about your process as an individual contributor.
So it's interesting. It's kind of a bigger story wrapped around that. So the business, the agency I was working for, was called the Search Agency, and it was founded by a graduate from HBS, Harvard Business School. And the way that we got our deals, really, just being transparently, is he had an amazing network of other Harvard Business School graduates, as well as, you know, people who had graduated before him. And so he had kind of on a first name basis was able to call up or get in contact with the CEOs and the CMOs of all these really large brands that he was selling into. And this is back in, you know, earlier days in the internet marketing world where it wasn't as crowded. And so that from a seller's perspective, yes, we did cold calls and we'd hired some third party, you know, cold call company to try and warm up leads for us. That didn't work out. We did do, you know, a fair share of outreach, but what always worked for us at that time was relying on David, the CEO, the founders, you know, warm leads that would come in. You know, they'd come into the sales room and then we'd go and we still have to pitch them and win the business. But that's how we really grew that agency. The interesting thing is that the same thing happened again at the next agency I worked at, which was a company called Science, and it was founded by the ex-CEO of MySpace, which is, you know, the MySpace, right? And so he too had a golden Rolodex of connections of people obviously advertising on MySpace. He knew a lot of these big brands. And so as a result of his network, again, on the sales team, he was able to funnel in really warm sort of leads, allowed us to sort of win these opportunities directly. It wasn't until I got to Scorpion, I mentioned this sales floor where these warm leads were coming in. And what was interesting was that the attorneys that were calling in and closing on the first inbound call, you know, signing up to a 12-month agreement, you know, to work with Scorpion, those attorneys did not know who Scorpion's founder was. And they didn't care who Scorpion's founder was. It was never a part of the conversation. What they cared about was that they wanted to work with a business who understood attorneys and could solve the specific problem that they had.
Very interesting. I would ask you, if you have a founder that has these connections, what is the way to help them? Or if you are a founder that has connections to a network, how do you start to go about distributing those leads to a sales team so that they can actually qualify and sell those? And then also building out structure if you don't have a network?
So the way to start is you need to find a really high quality, you know, salesperson. What I mean by high quality is very personable, someone who is empathic, but also hungry and all those good things. And the reason why I say that is that as a founder, and as you're extending your network and you're reaching into your network and you're bringing in these deals, these potential clients to your agency or your company, this salesperson is going to be a direct representation of you and let's call it your brand, right? So you really want to make sure that they have the sort of the soft skills built in. And the way that we did it at the search agency, with that first agency I mentioned, is that the founder would get the lead, and then he would probably sit in on the first meeting, sort of the introductory meeting, uncovering, discovery, and whatnot. And then from there, the salesperson, myself or other people, would sort of continue the conversation past that first meeting. And I think the value of that from the prospect's perspective is that they're not just being handed over to some salesperson, right? There's a transition, and as well as from the CEO or the founder's perspective, they make sure that they're really setting the seller up for success. Let's say, you know, the seller is involved. They have the relationship established, and if it turns out that the seller is not, you know, delivering, then the CEO, the founder, you could take that back. I got a number here.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, y'all. We're taking a, I just was taking a quick screenshot.
I didn't know I was going to do a countdown. I don't know what that is. Okay. All right.
This is for the social post later. We can cut this part out, by the way. Sidebar is that we're testing this Descript product out. And I was like, what happens if I push this?
Yeah.
And, that's pretty cool. It actually, it does the whole social, posts and everything.
Don't Love share it. That one. That's awesome. I was not looking at the,
all right. Yeah. Well, while we're off topic, why don't we do another one? So it'll give us the countdown here.
Sure.
Ready. I was trying to make it look organic. Like we were actually saying something. So it looked like we're having a real conversation and hopefully that's what comes out the other side.
Let's see how we do.
Oh, there we go. It looks good. Looks pretty organic.
Yeah.
Looks good.
Looks like we're having a party.
There we go.
Yeah, it's fun. Let's we'll switch gears just a little bit. We'll kind of cut what we can cut from this part. But Corey, tell us about this undertaking of implementing outbound in an inbound organization. And where I want to really specifically focus, where I'm struggling right now and where I think a lot of listeners are struggling right now is what are some ways that I can effectively use outbound specifically in my messaging? How can I really write messaging that resonates with my buyer? And then how can I be consistent about reaching out and use all the tools at my disposal to do that? I'm assuming you've got a lot of really great thoughts on this because of the scale at which you grew the outbound side of the business at Scorpion.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your process there.
Yeah. So the context is OG legacy sales guys who've been around for years and years and years, and they're used to really, like I said, they've got a good gig and it's all working really well. Here comes this new CMO who wants to bring in outbound and kind of, rain on their parade. Not a great update. So how we did this, and by the way, there was another person, a counterpart that was also brought in, Jamie Adams, and he came from Reach Local, which was a sort of a larger competitor in the space.
Yeah,
and he and I, implemented this, and the way that we did it, I'll give you the cliff notes. Effectively, we hired a third party sales trainer who was an expert in helping to train in sales teams in outbound. The reason why that's important is because the person we hired has a proven methodology that we liked, we bought into, we thought it was the right thing for the company. And so, there was a clear structure, there's a clear training process that we can run. That's number one. Number two is that we joined the sales team on the sales calls. We did the outbound too. We would celebrate the micro wins. We would also do something. Yeah. And so it was a very visual, it was a very sort of visible effort. Like the whole sales team was doing it. We would do cold call hours and it would be kind of a new muscle that we were building as an organization. And the fact that you had executives in there doing that too, I think really spoke a lot to the sales team. We also hired other sellers, people who didn't have the old habits, that were more willing to do something new. And so there was a combination of all of that. But I think another thing really helped, which is, and this is potentially very unique to Scorpion, which is we would send out high quality gifts to the lead list. Mm. So an example is cookies. We would send out gourmet, very delicious, amazing, remarkable cookies as a first touch, sales outreach to the list of in this case, attorneys that the salesperson would follow up on. So all of a sudden, they're not just doing a cold call, like out of the blue, like, hey, this is Corey from Scorpion. It's, hey, this is Corey. I want to make sure that you guys got the cookies.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah. So I want to go back to two things. I want to really underscore two things. And for anyone listening, just pay very close attention to this. Mm-hmm. You said something that I don't think has ever been brought up on this show before, but it gets me really going, which is when I've been on teams where the leadership gets out on the sales floor and starts picking up the phone, those have been not only my funnest sales roles, but some of the ones where I've done the biggest commissions and just, again, had the most fun doing it.
Yeah.
That is a huge thing that you can do as a leader, if you're listening right now, to increase morale on your team. If you're sitting behind a dashboard all day in Salesforce and you're just refreshing it, looking at your team's call numbers, and you're not doing call blitzes. We used to call them power hours, where we would just block an hour as a team. Everybody has to call from the, you know, VP of sales all the way down. Everybody's picking up the phone and calling somebody. And so I used to do this when I led a BDR team. We would do power hours, and I would just, you know, I didn't have a book of my own, but I would take, hey guys, Slack me your top exec contacts that you want me to call, and I'll do a cold call. I don't mind doing it in front of everybody. It's fun, and it builds a lot of credibility as a leader. And then the second thing I want to call out is I love the cookie play. And it's not because of the cookies or the gift, as you said. It's about the follow-up. And we did something very similar a few years ago where we sent these little, like, kind of bourbon cocktail balls of ice. I don't, Chase, you probably know the more formal way to, you know, the cocktail
sphere,
ice that goes.
The sphere ice.
The sphere, yeah. So we sent those out to a list of our contacts. And then there was a message that said something like, we want to break the ice with you, which was just, I thought was super clever. And I had an insanely high response rate on that campaign because I was the only rep that was actually calling and following up. A bunch of the reps had sent them out and they were just waiting for someone to open up their ice mold ball thing for bourbon, for old fashions, and call them and pick up the phone and call them and ask to learn about the software. That wasn't going to happen. So I pinged all those people on LinkedIn, called them, said, hey, I wanted to make sure we check with their assistant. I would call their assistant and say, hey, I want to make sure Jane got her gift that we sent her. It's really cool. It's an ice mold. So what you said, you know, is a great tactic, a great campaign, but it's also really important that you establish that the follow-up was really the key. Is you can call and say, hey, I want to make sure you got those cookies. Now that I have you on the phone, do you want to learn a little bit more about Scorpion?
Yeah. So it worked so well for us that we built a whole sort of habit. It really became a big part of our strategy. And I'll be specific. So we would send a gift to the same list every quarter. Once a quarter, the same attorney would get a gift from us. And if they ghosted us after, you know, a year, they've gotten four gifts from us. So that builds a ton of reciprocity and a ton of like just, you know, goodwill, if you will. Like, God, this company, Jesse really wants to talk to me. Okay, fine. I'll talk to them. Right. And we know that in the world of agencies, there's a sort of a product life cycle. Talk about the product life cycle. So it's like, you know, every American buys a new house every 9 years and they buy a new car every 5 years. Well, we knew at Scorpion that an attorney would be with their agency on average about 3 years. And so if we kept them on this gift list and we would send them a gift once a quarter for 3 years, we'd know that on average, every single one of those attorneys would be in the buying process, right? And so, but to your point about the follow-up, we wouldn't, the salesperson wouldn't get the gifts the next quarter if they didn't do the follow-up.
Interesting.
So it was a bit of there was some consequences if you didn't do the job, because to your point, the way that the actual process would work is in the follow-up, right? Like,
that's right.
You send cookies, they arrive, or a bourbon ice ball, that will interrupt their day, your prospect's day, for maybe a couple minutes. And if you're not calling them in that moment, in that window of time, you know, their phone's going to ring, the email is going to go ding, and they're going to just kind of go back to their day, and they're going to kind of move on. Yeah. You have to capture that moment through an interaction.
This is solid gold. Thanks for sharing some of those. These are real actionable stuff.
Yeah. Corey, question for you. Was the Scorpion team, was it all in-house? Were you all actually at office, or did you all have a remote team?
So, yes, we were all in-house. The primary sort of the headquarters was here in Los Angeles, and that's where the company was founded. A lot of the kids who were, like, the people who worked on the sales team were born and raised in that area. And so it was very much the sort of cultural hub of the company, as well as the sales team. It was a very sales focused or sales led organization. And so hiring people and people coming into the office, especially before COVID, was a very important part of the company, because it was always, we work hard and we party hard. And the party would not just be, you know, at the bar, it would be at the office, right? And so when I talk about celebrating, there was a keg, there was a, you know, there was ways to celebrate in person that was fundamental to really building up that momentum on the sales floor. What's interesting is we ended up expanding to Dallas and built a whole separate sales team over there. And not surprisingly, it was a different culture, right? It's a different vibe. They didn't party as much. They didn't connect and vibe the same way because it's just a different geography, despite still being in person in Dallas.
Do you think if you were building this team today in 2024 with likely a pretty heavy distributed remote team, how much would you have done differently than what you did when you did scale the team in person?
Well, I think the curveball there is just the distributed piece of it because, you know, in sales, my experience is there's just so much subtle value in being in person, whether it's the junior guy listening to the senior guy closing a deal and picking up some cues from that conversation to, you know, just celebrating the wins. It's hard to kind of get as juiced up and excited on Zoom as it is in person. So I'd probably want to hire and build a sales team in a specific area. I probably wouldn't do the distributed as, you know, as the first step. If it was truly a sales led organization, if sales was truly a sort of a strategic part of the growth. Hmm.
Well, Corey, talk to us about what are you seeing from agency owners these days of like, what is the number one pain point that most agency owners are coming to you with their sales team, or is it marketing or, you know, what is the biggest pain points that you're starting to see, from these agency owners coming to you?
I think the most sort of acute pain point that they're having right now is they can't get outbound to work and they're too heavily dependent on inbound, and inbound is harder than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of people are interested in this idea of doing gift-based outbound, because it is so different. It's not just relying on the big three, which is email, phone, and LinkedIn. Like, it's stepping outside of those, because let's face it, any market that's worth pursuing is being pursued on multiple fronts. And they're just going to tune out all of the noise, all of the sales sort of outreach through these traditional channels. But when you send a video brochure, or where you send cookies, or you send them a book with a handwritten note in it, that's a way to really build, sort of bypass a lot of the noise and go direct and to have a better chance of building a direct relationship with them.
And are you using a tool that is capturing, like, are you sending these out via Shopify, or what is the tool that you're using to actually see, okay, this was delivered. Now I can follow back up with this person, or, you know, it's at the post office. They haven't picked it up yet.
So I was doing a lot of this back at Scorpion before the days of a lot of these sort of platforms that have popped up. So I'll tell you about how we did it. We would we'd find a vendor, let's say a cookie vendor. We would work with them to create a custom tin and a custom note that would go in it. So it was a very sort of specific and bespoke order process. And they would work with us on that. And then we would either work with them or another vendor to ship it out, to do the fulfillment, what we call fulfillment, right? So we'd send a list and then they would send the package out. And then part of our requirement was making sure that that there was tracking in included as part of the delivery. And we would bring that into our CRM so that we would be notified when the package arrived, so that we could time the follow-up, right? And so it was, I would say, maybe a painfully manual process, but we felt that that was required for us to be able to really make sure that all the touch points lined up.
And when would you say is the best time to follow up with somebody that you've sent cookies to?
So if you think about it in like sort of a quarterly basis, you have the quarter starts, let's say, for argument's sake, that on day one, when the gift arrives, the sales team, as soon as that, like, they're trained, they're ready to go, the gift arrives at their prospect's office, that's the day they call when it arrives. If they don't get them on the phone, they leave a voicemail and they send an email. Then they wait a day. And then the day following, so day three, they call them up. And then if they don't get them, leave a voicemail, send an email. So you do that a total of six times, once every other day or so, once every other day for about 2 weeks. And then at that point, you peel back because they're ghosting you. They're not interested. They're not going to respond until the next quarter happens.
Yeah.
You send them a different gift and you follow up. Now, the idea is that they're not just hearing about you from these gifts. You're probably also potentially seeing them at the local, at the trade association conferences. Maybe your marketing team is helping to create a webinar. Maybe they're on your email list, or maybe they listen to your podcast. There's a lot of touch points in between these gifts outside of the direct outreach. And that's really the ideal situation where they're really kind of like getting the message, both literally and like they can feel it. Like, these guys really want to talk to me. They're not letting up. I'm going to see what's going on here.
Yeah. So it sounds like your team really built just this very consistent machine of using all of the traditional channels, phone, in-mail, email, all the kind of traditional prospecting channels. And then also this consistency of every quarter, assuming you're doing your follow-ups, you're also able to send out something tangible that you can then create more activity on. And then you're also trying to meet with people in person. And we actually just put out an episode today about how to navigate building pipeline with trade shows. So maybe actually quickly share some of the things that, in my experience, most of the biggest deals that I've done have come from that channel, is actually meeting someone in person. And I think the bigger the deal size you're trying to close, the more likely you're going to have to actually meet that person in the flesh in order to get that deal done. It's just the way it is. Most people don't want to spend $500,000 by sending someone an invoice through multiple Zoom calls. Like, it just doesn't work that way. At some point, you've got to get out and shake someone's hand and spend some time having a drink with them or a meal with them.
Yeah.
That's really what it's going to take. So Chase has a lot of experience with events, not only from his business experience in the past, but most recently some of the networking he's done. But maybe share with us some of your plays that you ran to pique people's interest at some of these events and get more pipeline from every show investment.
Yeah. So I would say, I would agree with you 100% that there is a correlation between the value of the deal, let's say in dollars, and the requirement for an in-person engagement or in-person interaction. You know, at my first agency, we would do these $1 million deals. And of course, there was an RFP, and the RFP would lead to an in-person meeting multiple in-person meetings, because in part, they just want to see you. They want to be in the same room as you, because if they're going to hire you for 3 years to do their SEO, then they want to have all the data possible to make sure they're making an informed decision. But as it relates to conferences and trade shows, the way that we operated at Scorpion was we had these different verticals. The sellers were assigned to a practice area. So a practice area for an attorney is like personal injury or family law. And so the family law sellers would go to the family law conferences. And what we would do, so there's a couple tactics that I think could be helpful. One is, this is kind of table stakes, but get the lead list before the conference and schedule all of your free time before you even get on the plane to go to the conference. You know, the idea of just showing up at the booth and you know, hoping that someone magically arrives and is like ready to buy, that's ridiculous. And that's frankly a waste of everyone's time. So you want to pre-book all your time. You engineer your success by doing all that footwork ahead of time. And the way you do that is you get the list. Maybe you work with your marketing team to set up some kind of experience, whether that could be a cocktail hour or an event that you host and so on and so forth, where you can create an experience. There's a great book out there called The Experience Economy. And in it, it talks about that the way you create an economic value for your company as a seller, as a brand, is to create a shared experience. You want to do something with your prospects, not just see them at the booth, but go and have an experience with them, because you'll create a shared memory. And that shared memory is something you can take back with you back at the office when you're following up and say, yeah, remember we were front row seats at the Britney Spears concert. Wasn't that just a trip? Like, who would have thought, you know, those, right? Yeah. And so think of it through, go ahead, Jesse.
No, I was going to say, we were talking yesterday about how we once did a prospect event where we took people to the casino. And I don't think I'll ever forget that. And I don't think those prospects will have ever forgotten that. So I can always call those same people up and say, Yes. Oh, come on. You remember the craps table at 1 a.m.?
Yeah. Yeah. I saw what you were doing. Yeah.
Exactly. Love that. This is so cool.
Yeah. So try to engineer a shared experience, really, as a salesperson, whether you can rely on your company to engineer that or take ownership of that yourself and, you know, invite your prospects to a unique experience, a hot air balloon, driving exotic cars, or whatever is going to be the fit for you and your brand. That's a great way to ensure that you're going to be able to have a warm follow-up once you get back to the office. Another tactic, since we're on it, just real quick, is if you can work with your marketing team to create some kind of reason to go to the booth, that's really important. So one thing you could do in the agency space is if you have a short list of prospects, like a high value prospects, create an audit of their, like a customized, printed, beautifully bound audit at the booth, and invite them to come get it at the booth. So they give them the opportunity to get value and a reason to go to the booth, and that can create an opportunity for a sales conversation.
We just had that idea on our episode that just went out, was because we try to appeal to everybody, and we realize there's listeners out there that are like, well, my marketing team's not going to spend money on an event, or they're going to spend the bare minimum. They're not going to spend any extra on gifts, or we're not going to have lots of cool swag. And so we were brainstorming, fine, make your own incentive and whatever that, and it could be just a website audit. It could be a campaign audit. It could be a write-up, or even like an open letter to the people attending. Hey, thanks for stopping by our booth. Here's what we observed in your current campaigns that we think we could improve upon. It doesn't have to cost money. You can, with a PDF file, probably generate some interest and some incentive to come stop by the booth.
Yes, exactly. And always with the lens of what's in it for them. Like, you know, prospects are smart. They know that you're inviting them to the booth so you can have a sales conversation. But maybe if you can give them some type of value in exchange for their time, that's always a way to kind of improve your odds of success.
Corey, I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile right now, and something that's, I've actually new to this is I call myself a recovering entrepreneur turned SaaS sales executive. But in the last few years, I've been hearing about these fractional CMOs, fractional CFOs, fractional people. And you say that you're a fractional CMO, and I would love to hear about how you can come into somebody's company as a fractional, and how does that really work in helping teams?
You know, so the way I think about it, I think it's because it is so new, it's evolving, and the sort of there's different definitions floating out there. But the way that I think about it is I've got 27 years now of sales experience, marketing experience, been through a couple of interesting company growth stories. And so I have a lot of value that I could potentially, for the right prospect, right company, I can provide a lot of value. And so it's for those businesses that maybe are struggling with a unique problem or a specific problem that I have background in, that I can come in from a strategic perspective, be able to identify the gaps or the challenges, and be able to help them to navigate and cross those gaps and to get through that based on, again, the expertise that I bring based on my specific experience.
And are these companies finding you? Are you prospecting these companies? How are people finding you?
So my approach is I'm a solopreneur, right? So it's just me. And the way that I grow myself and I grow my business is through content. And so the way that there's different channels that I produce content, and before I share those, the strategy is I have a specific topic that is very, very sort of narrow. And I'm speaking to a narrow audience about a specific topic over and over and over again over a long period of time. And so I do that across daily posts on LinkedIn. I have a daily email, and I have a YouTube channel as well as a podcast. Wow. all on this specific topic. And so as a result of that, you think about the people who are coming to me who I don't have an existing relationship with. They may have a need that they respond to based on maybe a post, a piece of content that I put out there. And typically what I'll see is they'll join my email list. Maybe they'll listen to the podcast and join the email list. Maybe they'll hang out on the email list a little bit. And then eventually they may raise their hand and say, hey, you clearly know something about this specific problem. You've solved it for others. Can we talk type of thing? And we'll have a conversation that typically leads to some type of engagement.
So I have a million questions right now, and I know we're probably coming pretty close to time. I want to really hone in on two final things that are related here as it ties into what you're doing right now. And this, sure, I know is a question we get a lot from our community and our listeners is how can I improve my sales and my pipeline generation with content and building a brand? It's a very, very hot topic. As you know, you're the embodiment of what success looks like. It sounds like you've gotten plugged into several of these fractional gigs that you're doing right now. Yeah. I'm sure you've generated a lot of pipeline from your list. Mm-hmm. So what are some things that the average listener who's maybe a frontline seller and perhaps they want to promote their company more in a way that's a little more social, what could you do to get started today in building a brand? And it sounds like you've covered the gamut. Like you've got a podcast, you've got YouTube, there's an email list. Daily posts on LinkedIn is really hard to do just from personal experience. Like that is incredible. So as much as you can share about that. And then after that, I want to talk about your book, but let's start with just some of the social selling and the brand building that you've done.
So I think the most direct and specific advice I can give is if you are a salesperson who is targeting a specific buyer, you want to become an expert in the problem that you solve or that your company solves. And the content strategy is you just talk about you evangelize the problem, right? You continue to talk about the specific problem that the person who you're trying to attract, you talk about the problem, you give them advice about how to solve it, how to address it over and over and over for a long enough period of time. They're going to assume that you know how to fix the problem because you understand the problem so well. So it's this idea of it comes from category design, but it is, you know, having a, you know, evangelizing the problem and then having a point of view about the problem. And that's it. And then, you know, you don't need to overcomplicate it, but you just need to be consistent over a long period of time. And as a result of that, people will begin to associate you as the guy or the gal who can solve this problem.
Where did you start? Was it the list first and then the podcast came, or was it a podcast and the YouTube channel, or was it, I just started posting on LinkedIn every day and then the rest fell into place?
Yeah. So it all is based on the email newsletter. It is, it is the one channel that I control a direct one-to-one relationship with my audience. Let's say the challenge with LinkedIn or Facebook or these other channels, as we know, I could post something on there, great piece of content that maybe a third, if I'm lucky, a third, maybe 5% of the audience that who is following me will see. Versus an email, I know that if I send out that same content over email, 100% of my audience on my list will see that that I've created that content. Whether or not they open the email, that's a different topic. But and so my whole strategy revolves around building my email newsletter. My book is for building my newsletter. My podcast is for building my newsletter, you know, subscriber list. Everything I do, because that is the best channel today to communicate with my audience.
So are your LinkedIn posts recycled newsletters? Or
yes,
I hate to use the word recycle, but are they just repurposed?
Yeah. It's literally, I write my email every day. And then when I write the email and I send it and I post it to my blog so I can get some SEO juice on that over time.
Nice.
And then I also put it into LinkedIn. I may edit a little bit for LinkedIn because social is a little bit different as far as the hook and whatnot, but that's basically the daily plan.
What service do you use for the email and for the blog piece?
Yeah. So I'm using Kajabi, which is a platform.
Tool.
Yeah. It's a platform for course creators and whatnot. My plan has always been to create a course. I've not gotten there yet, but that's why I'm on that platform. It's a pretty good, you know, email platform, website, blog. They also have a podcast product that I use as well.
Wow. I didn't actually know that. Yeah. I've heard of Kajabi. I actually talked to one of their execs once. I was trying to sell to him, funny enough, but I've looked at them. We use ConvertKit over here and we're liking it so far.
Yeah.
But I am on the market for a blog tool. So I'll have to take a closer look at Kajabi.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good.
So last question here, you wrote a book. And that book is titled Anyone, Not Everyone. Give us just kind of a quick pitch for the book. And then if you care to share a little bit around the creative process that went into it, And then let's close out with where, and if that's what we want to make the call to action, you know, where can people pick up the book?
Yeah.
And we'll put links in the show notes for all the other properties you have, the pod and the channel and everything
Beautiful.
Else.
Thank you. So the book is Anyone, Not Everyone. The inspiration behind it was, as I was leaving Scorpion, I realized that a lot of agencies are struggle with scaling. And that's the one thing that we figured out, you know, through trial and error, a lot of error over at Scorpion. So my point of view is that the best way to improve the likelihood that you as an agency will scale is to become a vertical market specialist. Not to be a generalist, but to become a vertical market specialist. And so based on my experience at Scorpion and elsewhere, as well as interviewing dozens of very successful agency owners who have also taken a vertical market approach, I've built a 5-step process that I take my high-end clients through. They hire me to come help them to take them from a generalist to a vertical specialist. It's the 5 steps that I take my clients through in the book. That's what the book is. And it's intended to take what I do for my high-end clients and make it available to anyone who wants to read the book.
Love that. It's a whole funnel built around book and all of the other social and streaming and everything else. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. So the strategy with the book is it's written for a very specific narrow audience. It's not for everyone.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
Yeah, despite it's niche.
It's niche. And despite the fact that you know, a lot of businesses outside of agencies suffer with being a generalist, serving too many mm-hmm. types of businesses. But it's specific to that. It's full of examples and case studies and whatnot. But so the purpose of that is for me to build my newsletter, my subscriber list. So on my site, I'm going to be giving away the audiobook, which you can get for free in exchange for, say, you know, subscribing to my newsletter, right? Again, going back to that idea. Although you could buy it from Amazon and the Kindle and all that stuff. And the process, just speaking to your other question, Jesse, the process has taken me about 18 months. It's really a lot of work to self-publish. I'm self-publishing. A lot of work, because not only do you have to write it, but you have to figure out like how to promote it and how to distribute it and all these things. Like I've spent way too much time on learning that whole neck of the woods. But I'm at the end of that sort of that learning process, and I'm excited to launch it. It does launch in March. And so between now and then, if folks want to be notified when the book launches, as well as get some sort of bonus goodies as well, if they're interested in this topic, they can go to the website. The name of the website is anyonenoteveryone.com, and they can fill out a form to just, you know, be notified when the book goes live.
That's awesome. We will paste that in the show notes so folks can go check that out.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for joining us today. And I just keep hearing this quote from Alex Hormozi, there's riches and niches.
That's it.
I would say you're the niche guy. You know, you really hone in on that of just forcing people to not be a generalist and go head into one category and be an expert in that.
It's my passion. I believe in it in my bones. It's the right thing for businesses to do. And my goal is to just help entrepreneurs create a bigger impact in their world. So that's my why.
Love that. Well, thanks again for coming on. And everybody go download, get on Corey's email list. And we look forward for the book launch.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys.